Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar, joined this week by Andy Wolf.
Call me Andy.
Someone had to take that one. Cody Wolf. Oh. And Jack Estabrook.
Welcome to the human race.
Our movie
we should
this
just
week.
All talk like that the whole episode.
It's sort of like
I thought you were dead, Alex. What's going on?
Yeah, it's kind of a variation on the Billy Baldwin voice from Sliver, if you think about it. You know, it seems like they're from the same school.
It's nice you joined us in hologram form too, by the way, since you couldn't be here.
I might be a hologram.
Yeah. Don't they all talk like that? Every
who?
When you say all tough guy. Oh,
every mid '90s tough guy kind of talks a little like this. Really hanging on that last letter a little more than they should.
Carried over to Batman too.
Yeah. Our movie this week is 1996, Escape from L.A., the sequel not many people asked
sequel.
For to 1981's sequel. Escape from New York.
It felt more like a remake set in a different city.
Yes.
Well, it didn't feel like a remake too much because Escape from New York kind of to me was...
boring.
It was a little slow, but more realistic.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
More situationally realistic than this.
Well, it's a low budget.
I mean,
Escape
believable?
From New York
yeah.
is kind of like
yeah.
a low budget, a little grittier,
right.
you know, kind of like a true action movie. I don't even know what genre I would put Escape from L.A. There is no genre.
So bad it's good?
Well, no, I would not. I wouldn't even put it in.
I just had
you're going
fun
with that, huh?
This is ridiculous. Yeah. I'm with Cody there.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll get into it. First we get, here's the first point I want to debate, and I'm not asking this sarcastically. The titles are done in sort of like a
oh my
Tron-ish
God.
Style.
Yeah, with like this cheesy like green laser tracking.
Do you think this is intentionally retro, or do you think this is John Carpenter's attempt at like 1996 computer graphics? I couldn't make up my mind. I really was
torn. I always thought he was just trying to tie in the whole satellite thing, the satellite EMPs. So I think it's supposed to be like a laser tracking satellite thing.
But it looks so...
It looks very low res.
So
you mean why I use the
effect? I
think
it was John Carpenter's look in the future.
Oh, God.
Oh. Of computer graphics.
By the way, disclaimer.
Like their future pad they have with the
Andy Wolf is a true John Carpenter enthusiast. We should have noted that. Oh, and I'm sorry. I gave the wrong title for this movie. I should
John Carpenter.
The title of the movie is John Carpenter's Escape from L.A. Because
but John Carpenter disappears from the title and the credits. It's John Carpenter's Escape from L.A., then John Carpenter disappears, and it's like just Escape from L.A.
I'm surprised it wasn't the other way around.
If he had a final cut, it would have been the other way. Yeah.
But you bring that point up, being a Carpenter movie, I've always loved the way Carpenter starts films.
With credits?
Yeah, but no.
with text
and
on screen.
And Jamie Lee
no,
Curtis
that's what
narration.
I'm saying. Most, well, they have done it before, but a lot of other ones, like The Fog and Prince of Darkness and... they
Halloween.
Live in all that.
Memoirs of an Invisible
Man. Starts,
other great films.
They usually start, and I like how he does it. He usually has some nice pacing going with credits over that.
Right.
And it gives you something to look at as you're seeing the credits. And, you know, it's usually builds a story in the beginning.
Yep.
Which I like that about Carpenter. But this one.
Nope, not here.
Not here.
Not here.
Yeah, no, it's just these cheesy, like.
White on black with some green
8-bit green and red tracking laser lines like a grid.
I could never be completely convinced that they did this intentionally retro. I think this may have just been a horrible graphics job.
Probably
that was like later sold as like, oh yeah, we wanted to.
Well,
look retro.
I tend to say no, but then I remember the underwater sub scene. I'm like, oh yeah,
yeah.
I would have said, hey, let's cut that scene out.
Terrible looking shark.
The
sub was terrible. It was moving like a freaking.
Well, the sub was too. Yeah.
Somebody had like a piece of paper on a stick and just.
Oh, flash! Yeah,
the
original
stick,
like
the helicopters
cereals.
The helicopters in my mind stick out as looking like they were made on an N64.
Well, when I was watching too, like I thought it was made in like 90. Then when I looked at it later and it was like it was 96, I was like, wow, that was really bad for 96.
This is atrocious, even for 96. Yeah, I mean,
there
were TV
shows. Like Independence
shows
Day
this.
Is like 95, 96. And that, you know, those are,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
this is like a decade behind
those
it.
Those are mostly not computer graphics now, no, I think.
Right.
But then, like,
right.
Godzilla a couple years later, which is a terrible movie, but the.
No, yeah, yeah, the effects are better. The effects
terrible.
Are much better than this.
So this one looked like it was. Like 89.
This movie also starts off with a hallmark of movies we see here. tons of voiceover. It can. I don't know why movies, bad movies,
at least
cannot
start
establish
with a shot of
anything.
Earth.
Well, that's we do get a shot of a satellite, so yeah, I mean they barely held back on that, and just tons of. They could have established
this
in so many other ways. They just set up like, okay, and it's a bunch of nonsense. We don't even really need to know it. It's just like L.A., an earthquake caused L.A. to break off from the coast, and it's a crazy prison now.
Well, there's also
this
government.
The government's like gone crazy and is like,
censorship.
Do that,
it's got censorship's gone out of control. This does not tie into the plot at all, really, except for it's a motivation for the bad guy to be able to rally people to his cause to kind of stand against this society that America has become, which is overly censored.
Basically,
you know, everything has to be
Nazi Germany.
It's kind of like a Nazi Germany type situation. But overall, that didn't really
happen. Anyone
who
does anything that isn't moral gets sent to L.A.
Which is not really a prison.
Yeah, it's just kind of.
It's kind of like a deportation port, which is what I thought was kind of a shameless way to make this movie different from Escape from New York, because it's at its core the exact same story.
Yeah. So it starts off with Snake Plissken being, I mean, just there's just so much VO. And this movie then
it opens the same way as Escape from New York. Snake gets dropped off, he gets walked in, some guy walks up and starts talking to him. It's not Tom Atkins this time.
But they also do they go I know it's not Tom Atkins.
They needed Tom Atkins.
Yeah, oh God. They go with all of the old tricks how you can't, like, forcing storyline, which is they do voiceover. They do that as much as possible until you can't take the voiceover anymore. Then they go to the worst, like, cliche next, which is you start seeing news reports. So I start groaning at that. I'm like, oh, God, we've already had VO. Now we're going to a fake news report. Then they go to the third cliche, which is public address announcements to get information. I'm like, I'm like, you're running out of cliches. How else can they force information? Could a character talk to another one? Is that an option in John Carpenter's world?
And what is Snake Plissken? Is he a bad guy or is he a rebel? Or
he's the worst criminal in the history of the United States.
That's what they're saying. So is he actually like criminal or are they just making him out to be one?
Here's some great storytelling. You never see Snake Plissken be a criminal.
Right, you never know for sure.
He's more like a mercenary bounty hunter.
That's what I'm wondering. Is he?
Well, in this
somebody we would like. Has he killed
in the first
seven? You know,
in Cleveland,
17 people, and
he massacred
in cold blood
school children in Cleveland.
It's one of the big problems with this is John Carpenter makes this like everyone in the world is like, oh, Snake Plissken. It's like, well, this is a movie from 1981 that was sort of a cult hit. Like, it's not like people, like young people in 1996 were like, oh, I can't wait for that sequel to that little-known 1981 movie that beloved character, Snake Plissken, we're all talking about. Like, it's 15 years later, probably should have done a little better setup on Snake Plissken than assuming that everyone knows who he is.
Yeah,
and he never changes his clothes. He's got the exact same outfit on from the first movie.
Yeah, I noticed that, and it didn't. I groaned. I was like,
"Well, it's a stupid thing to complain about, but just to say that it's literally the same character. Like they copy pasted him out of the other movie.
Well, did they say how
they give him a new outfit?
Did they say how long? I don't remember.
16 years, I said.
Real time has passed between the films.
I didn't remember that.
But the films are each set X amount of years into the future.
My question too, before we get into it, is like, how many years has L.A. been a prison?
Well, it happened in 1999, I think, and then the movie takes place in 2013.
So it was like 14 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's interesting because they still have power on the island. They still have gas and shit.
They drop
gas and guns in there and ammo for these guys.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about about L.A. that doesn't.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, that doesn't quite.
Hey, you know
up.
That penal colony over? Drop some ammo in there. They need ammo, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, because gasoline goes bad pretty quickly too. So it's not like
you're not gonna have like 14
well,
years
maybe,
of gasoline.
Maybe there's a couple of scientists inside who know how to create artificial means of propulsion, like some fuels and stuff.
Thanks for clearing it up,
Jim. Yeah, yeah.
I'm choosing to think that. Go on with the movie.
All right, so we get into Snake Plissken gets brought into this deportation center. The authorities have him. They bring him in. At this point, by the way, in John Carpenter's directing career, he has lost all subtlety. Like, subtlety is gone. We're now just seeing prisoners being electrocuted in the hallways, of the deportation center. It is lit the way, like, a Sci-Fi Channel showed. I mean, this movie had a $50 million budget. Mm-hmm. I would love to know where. In 1996.
It didn't look it.
No, it looks terrible.
It didn't go to the CG. We know that.
No. It looks like a Fox TV show.
The first one looked better, and that was 15 years earlier with like one quarter, if that, of a budget.
I would call because
they're trying to make it look bigger, and it's like.
Yeah. Sometimes terrible. You get the money, you overdo it.
Well, I have a feeling that $20 million or $25 million went into John Carpenter's pocket or something.
Yeah.
I mean, because this is, and we don't normally attack this in the little inside baseball, with some of the worst production design I've seen on a big budget movie. I mean, the sets, everything looked cheap.
Yeah.
It looked TV cheap. Yeah. And you're like, $50 million? This is what $50 million got you? And nobody in this movie, other than Kurt Russell, had to be making much money. I mean, there's no one else.
Yeah, I'm sure Kurt Russell made a bunch because I think he wrote it or helped write it.
He was a pretty big star, but no one else was taking. I mean, Steve Buscemi was barely up and coming in '96. Yeah, I mean,
Pam Grier was more or less a cameo. Yeah, this is before Jackie Brown, right?
This is pre-Jackie Brown.
She was already a star in the '70s, obviously. But
yeah, I mean, she was. It's lucky to be in. You know, Bruce Campbell wasn't big. I mean, nobody in this was big.
Bruce Campbell,
Peter Fonda. Yeah,
Bruce Campbell's in this.
Where I didn't see him.
He's the surgeon general of Beverly Hills.
I didn't recognize him. Holy shit.
He's got makeup. And
stuff. Yeah. He's probably one of the best parts of the movie.
I didn't recognize him. Son of a bitch.
All right, so they bring Snake Plissken into this room and say, Snake, the president's daughter has been kidnapped by this terrorist group that operates out of LA, and they think that she's been brainwashed. And please, if
I love
anyone,
the video they show him too.
I know.
It's like so bad.
Is this like some kind of like a future dating website that he met her on?
I know. Like this was really weird.
I know.
It's just the handling of this was so odd. Like there were choices made that no one can justify. And if someone can explain, okay, so the president's daughter has been kidnapped, and there's something about black satellites.
Box. Yeah, there's. She took this black box thing and ran away to the city with this terrorist guy. And the black box has this like controller in it that controls the satellites around that are surrounding the Earth that will shoot EMPs anywhere they want them to. So they can shut down any country they want.
For the amount of time they spent explaining this, it was like the more Stacey Keach talked about it, the more confused I got.
Well,
like,
they understood talk about it like less. They expound upon it way too much. It was like they could have just said, look, there's satellites.
Get the black box.
There's EMP. You know, they can shoot these pulses at any city they want. They can shut down any country. Just get the box back.
Yeah, if Stacey Keach had just been like, she has a box that controls all the world's satellites. We're like, okay, stop right there. Like, got it. Right. Like, yeah, this made it.
And then they feel the need to inject him with the disease as an insurance that he'll do it, which is just like in the first movie.
He has 10 hours. Yeah.
Vein caps.
Yeah. That they'll give him an antidote if he gets out within 10 hours. And then we get
10
this.
10 hours, that's pretty dicey, isn't it?
Yeah, no,
it's not much time.
Hours.
I know.
There was no evidence that like this guy was going to do it like right away or anything. It wasn't like he's going to do it tonight. I mean, I guess they were setting up something where he had some big event and he was going to do something, but
it felt very like
they could have just told Snake that, like, hey, he's going to do this at 8 o'clock tonight, so you only had till 8 o'clock instead of like you have 10 hours to live.
Well, then it actually later turned out that that it meant nothing, but
everything meant nothing.
We also get one of my favorite mid-90s things that like everyone had to work. If you were making a science fiction movie, you had to work in virtual reality, like in holograms. Like it was like. Everyone was convinced, like, oh, holograms, they're going to be everywhere, you know. Yeah. At some point, Snake Plissken's like, I'm going to punch you in the face, Stacey Keach. And everyone was a hologram. They were talking to him as holograms, which I'm like, and I'm just watching this and I'm like.
And then they fooled him again.
Well, yeah, and then so this is so dumb.
He just keeps getting fooled.
So dumb. So we get a straight up Q scene from a James Bond movie where they start giving him his gear,
including a brand new jacket that masks him from detection from
stealth jacket.
I walked out.
Yeah, it's like stealth jackets to give
him a cool
I did. I walked out of the room.
Nothing that. Well, this is like
basically here's a big gun. Here's a jacket that'll mask you from. Heat radar
because it looks cool. They give him a jacket.
It's just like and why not attack attack James Bond movies while we're at it. I mean, it's like those Q scenes where they give him a bunch of specific gadgets where you're like, well, we'll be seeing that. Okay, yep, okay. That's a very specific item. I'm sure we'll see him use that once and once only. There's something else we'll see him use once and once only. And they hand Snake Plissken this giant gun, and Snake Plissken's like, ha-ha, and he turns it on, you know, Stacy Keach, and like, is like, I'm gonna, and like, starts shooting him. And it doesn't work. And Stacy Keach then is like, ha-ha! We put the first clip double in as Blanks.
But still, if you shoot a clip of Blanks at someone's face from 3 feet away, it's going to do some damage.
He would do some serious damage. Yeah, and yeah. What if, by the way, and I would put this in, what if Snake Plissken had not turned the gun on Stacy Keach? Been in L.A., some bad guys were all around him, and Snake Plissken was trying to save his life. Would Stacy Keach then have been like, ha-ha, we got him?
Or what if Snake Plissken, because he's this master criminal, knew that the gun was off, wait, quickly switched the clip, then turned around and went, ha-ha, and shot Stacy Keach and everyone else in the room?
That would have been very trespassing.
And what would have been his plan?
You thought this gun was full of blanks? Congratulations.
But what also would have been his plan? He goes to shoot Stacy Keach. What was his next move?
I don't know.
Because he's in the heart of this facility, surrounded by armed guards. Yeah. He's screwed.
Yeah.
I do love, too, the scene where he's putting on his outfit, and it's like this, like... Like this almost like sexy scene, him like pulling up his pants. It's like cheesy 90s music playing. He's like strapping on his boots.
It went on a solid 15 seconds.
Like a Joel Schumacher Batman ass shot.
Yeah.
It stretches on. You can hear that stretchy sound of the pleather.
You almost feel like Kurt Russell was in the editing room, like, no, let this play. Let it play. You know?
Show me flipping my collar up. So yeah. I'm cool.
Whereas, like, everyone else was standing behind him, kind of looking at each other, like, oh, we got to get out of this. So they put him in a submarine.
Yeah, like a one-man sub, which is, that's like the opposite of the one-man airplane from the first movie. Let's put him in a one-man sub. It's different, right?
Right. And this scene is really strangely handled.
Oh, okay, my God.
So he gets launched in this one-man sub and is being launched towards Los Angeles. And Snake Plissken is driving the sub?
Yes.
Question mark? Okay, he is driving it.
He's in it all by himself, isn't he?
Well, I guess. Oh, there's a remote. Immediately, Stacy Keach starts being like, you're going too fast. You're going too fast. And I'm like, well, why is that bad? Like,
because the nuclear reactors were overheating.
Okay.
And it was going to blow.
And why was Snake Plissken going that fast? Like, what was
he's trying, just trying to save time.
He's angry that they fooled him, I guess.
He's like, I only got so much time before I'm dead, so I'm going to get there.
It still took him like 15 minutes to get there.
Well, it still took like 15 minutes.
Yeah, they spent like an hour and a half giving him his guns and stuff, because when he got in the boat, he had like 8.5 hours left. And it took another 15 to get to the city.
So he basically gets to L.A. like the reactor's going up. There's all these like red flags and like, he like crash lands the sub and then pretty much does nothing. Like he really like, you know, floored the gas to get there and then proceeds to stand around for like 10. Like maybe if you had parked the sub like a human... You wouldn't have like blown up a nuclear sub. Had a ride home.
We have to mention too how terrible the underwater scene was. How he's like driving past all these like LA landmarks that had sunk, and like there's a giant like Sharknado shark that like comes up and awkwardly like tries to snap at the sub. And
you know how bad it is.
The sub is moving in a way that a sub wouldn't move. Weird gliding.
Well, here's some of the things that are going on. I mean, first of all, the shark looks worse. You know, in Back to the Future 2, when the 3D shark comes out, like it looked worse than that. Well,
basically,
shark.
Like just like a still image, just kind of like moving at him. Like it doesn't like
And they've been doing computer-generated sub-imagery for a while. If you go back and watch Hunt for Red October, which is from 1989 or 1990...
There's CGI subs
CGI subs in that that all look better than what you're seeing in this 1996 movie.
If I was watching a movie, I'd have been like, you got to cut this whole sub scene out.
Or cut it way down.
Just keep with him in the sub and Stacy Keach and just come out of the water. And
Stacy Keach yelling at him, slow down!
here's an idea. Why not have like a speedboat? Why not just have him get on a speedboat and then cut to a shot of him pulling up and then jumping out of the boat and walking on shore?
I think they're worried if they saw him coming that they would use the EMPs.
But he's wearing his super stealth jacket.
I guess so. He,
well,
yeah, so
visually,
he,
like if someone's standing on shorts, he's coming.
He crash lands the sub, and the sub
that's why
sinks,
they couldn't fly him in, yeah. I think.
And it's gone forever, so it's like...
They had to sub him in.
Okay.
Right now. Well, plus, Stacey Keach is like, take care of that sub, because it's the only way out. And then he loses it, and it's like, doesn't matter.
When I saw that sub sink, I thought for sure he's going to ride back on a fire wave. That's where I thought we were going with this.
Oh boy!
I like how you get from sub sinking to fire wave.
Okay, yeah. I know how he's getting out. Yeah, be a giant fire, and he's gonna. I swear, I can't surf on fire.
Though.
I swear, yeah. I saw him surfing fire in the trailers.
I think we all wish we saw that.
I swear, I did.
The movie does a great job of setting up meaningless stakes with this sub, and then immediately disappointing.
The whole thing.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the whole Beverly Hills part was wow. Why do we even need that?
Well, it's a fill time.
Right,
because he met a character, and then the character gets killed.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And didn't really give him any more information, other than, they're putting people in there for religious beliefs, too.
Right.
That was about the only reason for her to be
there. Well, and we have to talk about one of my favorite dumb scenes in this movie. So the submarine sinks, and Peter Fonda comes up and is like,
Hey, man.
Sorry about your sub. Hey. And Snake Plissken's like, I gotta go. And then the scene ends... And Snake Plissken walks away, and then like 30 seconds later, like Peter Fonda's just back again. He's like, "Hey man, are you Snake Plissken?" And Snake's like, "Ugh," and walks away. And the scene ends again. What's happening here?
We already know you, Snake Plissken, so there's no reason for that scene at all.
Why break it up into two scenes?
Right.
I think they're just trying to show that people are willing to help him because he's Snake Plissken.
I guess so.
Well, that's kind of part in the first movie. Ernest Borgnine knew who he was in the first movie.
Not then.
It felt like a failure of blocking. Like, it felt like something got screwed up, like, in the way the scene was shot.
Yeah,
and
they had to recreate it in the
editing bay somehow. Because there's, like, weird cutaways and, like, you cut away to nothing several times.
There's another spot, too, coming up where, wow, they had to cut something out because how they handled that transition is, like...
Yeah.
Oh, when it fades.
Yeah, in the tunnel.
Yeah. I'd say the same thing when I saw it. They could have just had it come around the corner. They dissolved it.
That's a convenient... Yeah. Something happened there.
So, pretty much immediately, like, Snake Plissken... So, I think, is this where Snake Plissken meets Steve Buscemi next?
What's he called?
He meets him after the tour guide to the stars, or whatever.
After what?
Parade thing. No, Plissken goes into the city, sees all the prostitutes and all the...
And then he goes in and finds
a team member that's dead.
Yes, because
they didn't know where this one team member was from when they tried to recover the thing before. So Stacey, he's going to find him.
Right, and Stacey Keach gets hold of him and says... What are you doing? I'm going to watch a parade.
Yeah, again, Snake Plissken, who's in a huge rush to get to LA, is not in a rush.
He's not in a rush now.
I like to take in the sights.
And then he does kind of come across the main bad guy. His name's like Cuervo Jones, right?
I think that's what it was.
Okay. Yeah, he's supposed to be, he looks kind of like a South American, stereotypical South American.
Yeah,
like,
with the beret and the...
Yeah.
Like, yeah, with the beret and the army fatigues that are like one size too big, kind of like a young Castro.
Yes. Yeah, they're doing something like that. And he comes across, so you get this weird kind of like scene where Snake Plissken is chasing this guy, and there's like he's on a motorcycle.
I love the bad CGI when he jumps into the back of the truck on the motorcycle.
That was fantastic. What are you talking about?
Yeah. There's
studio lighting versus on-set lighting, on location lighting. It doesn't mix.
Well, here's
plus the animation's just like a still image. Like, boop, boop.
This is a real I feel like so many times in pre-production, like, I think Paramount released this, must have been like, John, how are you going to do this? And the answer was just like, computers. And it was like, okay. Like, you know. And
Has Carpenter used computer animation like in a film prior to this? Or do you think that maybe this is his first experience with heavy use of CGI?
Great question, Jack. Actually, John Carpenter's career has basically imploded since the invent of the computer. So not really.
Don't be harsh on John.
I don't need
he should
to be
not,
harsh.
He should not.
He made Vampires. Vampires is awesome.
After watching this one, he should not be doing action movies.
horror movies.
I would just take out, what? Yeah, just movies. Oh, stop at movies.
Vampires is awesome.
Now you mean Jackass.
What has he done since then that was...
Vampires?
The last one he did was good. I liked
it. I didn't see The Ward.
What's it called?
The Ward.
The Ward, yeah.
The Ward, which you seem to like.
You like it because of John Garver.
How about Ghosts of Mars? Oh, that
I didn't watch that one.
Really. I haven't seen it either. I know that.
I just DVR'd Vampires.
Vampires.
Watch it.
Vampires is not as bad as this.
It's got James Woods in it.
And this is, he shouldn't be doing action movies like this because a lot of it, when you watch it, you're like, this is lifeless. We're talking action scenes. And they are just lifeless.
Something that I can say about John Carpenter is he's like a master at pacing a horror movie. But then he applies that same pacing technique to action movies, and you get a snoozer.
Right. It's like They Live, where people are just walking around, and it's like...
Yeah, yes. If you got action going on, just a wide shot, and then you're hanging on it, it doesn't work.
You don't have to build action like you build horror.
Right.
Because
you don't need to build tension for action.
Right. I think
things just go into a motorcycle chase.
Fell apart in the early... Well, like early to mid-80s for John Carpenter, when he made a decision, which is... I gotta work more comedy into my movies, and that was a fatal decision when that took things down a terrible road for
Prince
a
of
lot
Darkness,
of movies.
For example,
well, and it's what hurts a lot of They Live.
I can't get through it anymore. I keep trying.
Memoirs of an Invisible Man, and I don't hate In the Mouth of Madness. I don't hate that movie, but. Yeah, so that's all right. So John Carpenter, noted terrible filmmaker, modern era terrible filmmaker, amazing
hit
filmmaker.
Hit or miss. I'll give you hit or miss filmmaker.
From 78 to 81, he was good.
Yeah, when did The Fog? 82. Wait,
well,
when's
The Fog?
Is the Fog
his last good movie?
Is The Fog before or after The Thing?
I think it's 80.
After.
The Fog is 80.
Before The Thing. The Fog was after.
The Thing is great.
The Thing is 82.
The Thing is fantastic. I thought The Fog came after.
No, The Fog was right after Halloween.
Yeah.
That was our next thing to do after Halloween.
We're not counting Big Trouble in Little China?
I don't...
That came after The Thing.
I don't...
You don't know if it's good or not? I don't know.
I never watched it.
I don't think it holds up that well, actually. Okay, but anyway, so at one point, Snake Plissken loses his giant machine gun.
And his jacket.
And his jacket. He doesn't seem to care at all. Like, there was a point where he could just... Like, it gets knocked out of his hand. He could just go back and pick it up, but he chooses not to go back.
He's Snake Plissken.
Well, it's a machine gun.
But he knows it's gonna work out for him. Don't worry.
I guess.
He's got his guns on him.
And somehow the Cuervo Jones is able to bolo him. I mean, you don't see many. I'm like...
Is that game, that long game?
Yeah.
Well, is that called bolo? Is that what's...
Yeah, well, it's also a weapon. Like,
oh, no, that long game they throw those...
The ropes?
Yeah, the ropes on the balls.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, those are also bolos.
Two little balls on a string.
We are going down a dark path here. But, I mean, Snake Plissken has many guns, and he's stopped by a bolo. Oh,
no.
I mean, that just screams to me that, like, somebody involved in this, either Kurt Russell or John Carpenter, was like, I want to see a guy use a bolo. And it has to be in there. We've got to do this with a bolo.
That has that feel of that, where it's like, oh, well, this will be great if we have him going to Beverly Hills and this happens. Let's use a bolo. And just like, then they put the situations in it somehow. They try to string it all together.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they did. You could tell.
Yeah, because it'd be different if, like, the bad guy was, like, using a bolo at some point beforehand. Like, just, like, if it was his thing.
It's
like
an expert
with
thing, yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Like, later on he uses a bolo. But it's one time he just pulls a bolo. He's like, here.
Yeah, it's a one time. Yeah, it kind of felt like a rejected, again, James Bond moment. Where there'd be, like, a James Bond henchman who's like, oh, he's the master of the bolo.
Yeah, right.
You know?
They call him Bolo Jones.
We also never see him use a bolo again. It's just a one-off thing.
Yeah. I did like the scene, the part at the end of the scene, though, when he gets knocked off, he loses his gun. The big gun, and he loses his jacket and everything, and he gets surrounded by the henchmen and whatever. Cuervo's like, kill him or whatever, and he drives away.
And there's six henchmen.
I don't think they kill him. They're like,
it's like six henchmen, like all with guns like on Snake Plissken, and Snake Plissken goes, yeah. Let's play by Bangkok rules.
And they're like, okay.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, hey. Back
I'm going
to throw a little more room. Need a little more room. Back up.
This sounds good. Hold on.
I love how they entertain this for like a trailer shot.
Yeah. This guy we've got to kill. Hold on. There's a way to do things. You know, professional standards.
So he picks up a tin can and says, I'm going to throw this in the air and nobody shoots until it hits the ground. And
I wonder what's going to happen.
He throws it in the air, and then he just shoots all of them.
I did not see that comment.
I like that, though. It's kind of funny.
I did, too. It was a trailer moment.
It's not the worst moment in the movie, but I was kind of thinking, like, why did the henchmen agree to Bangkok rules? Why was someone like, no, we're just going
to
kill
you.
Like, why would we do
it? Our boss is killing us. We're doing.
Yeah, why are we going to give you a chance to kill us? Like, we're just going to kill you. Yeah. And then there's this great, I have a note here. There's a great moment where Snake Plissken's like, I'm tired. I'm just going to sit down for a few minutes.
He picks up a chair.
He just sits down. Why are we seeing this?
And I love it too.
He's getting old.
It comes immediately after a conversation with Stacey Keach where he's like, you only have like 7 hours to live or whatever. Yeah. And then he's like, he hangs up and he picks up a chair and just sits down. It's like,
I laughed out loud at that. Great pacing. You know, again, things we don't need to see.
It's not like he just, like he picks the chair up and like dusts it off and like sits down. It's not like he just sits in a chair and sitting there.
Oh, nothing makes me feel better than a good sit.
Cracked open a cold one.
We then get Steve Buscemi now drives up as Map to the Stars Eddie.
Yep.
And who kind of like, again, is there's another kind of like meaningless scene where he's like, hey, you're Snake Plissken, you know. Do you want my map of L.A.? And it's this bit that I'm sure sounded funny on paper.
Of like, do you have a map that he can use?
Yeah, it's like a star map.
And I like that his star map little device looks exactly the same as the
thing that controls the
satellite device that the government's built.
Yes.
A convenient callback, maybe?
Same model.
Yes.
It has a little disc in it that is an audio disc that says, you know, map the stars, and that's the map. I guess it's just an audio.
Who
disc,
would be buying this?
Well, it's like a tour, right?
Especially for $50,000.
Yeah.
Isn't he like a tour guide? Like you just kind of put like you put the cassette tape in your car and you drive through like an old.
Well, this is like a joke.
Battlefield or something.
This movie is also full of
LA
Southern California in jokes. That most people wouldn't get, because a big thing in LA is they sell these maps to stars' homes. So
I guess everybody knows that though.
Yeah.
Right?
Where Justin Bieber lives. Ooh.
Yeah, but this joke is not sold very well. I mean, Steve Buscemi is
doing
his best with it.
I know what they were setting up though with the device.
Yeah, the device. Yeah.
Yeah. And it runs in a little mini disc.
And introducing Steve Buscemi's character.
Because mini discs were also kind of like holograms. Mini discs were going to be the big thing in the future.
Yes. You see, that's also very commonly shows up in mid-90s movies. So now Snake Plissken's just like... By the way, Steve Buscemi... I think... Does Steve Buscemi have a car in the scene? No, he doesn't have a car.
He walks on the corner.
Okay, he's walking around. But
so he's going to Beverly Hills.
He goes to Beverly Hills.
For no reason whatsoever.
Where's Cuervo Jones?
Yeah, no reason. Goes and
he meets a character.
This girl.
The girl.
Yes.
This
so you're like, oh, okay. So she's going to be part of it now.
Maybe like a love interest.
Well, but let's
he meets her like in the bushes. Like he's just in the bushes.
Let's talk about that, because this setup, I could not fathom what was going on here. We just cut to Snake Plissken hanging out in the bushes. I don't know what he's doing there.
He's in the bathroom, maybe.
And there's another girl in the bushes. And I'm like, does Snake Plissken know her? And then she's like, be quiet. And he's like, nobody tells me to be quiet. So he's not quiet. And I'm like,
no, it's the other way. He is quiet. And
keeps saying, like, you gotta be quiet, man. You gotta be quiet. They're gonna hear you. So you gotta be quiet. And he's like, you're the one who's making all the noise.
That's right.
And he like just walks out of the bush.
Here it is, Snake Plissken. He walks into L.A., walks into this building through everybody, goes to the parade, gets in the jumps a motorcycle, goes through all this thing, and then he goes into Beverly Hills and sees
there's like
a band of people in robes, and he's like, I gotta get in the bushes.
You've
been walking over like crazy, and all of a sudden you gotta hide.
I gotta
find a tin can.
And they couldn't. I did not know what
I
was
gotta
going
ditch
on
that weirdo map to the stars, Eddie. He's been following me all day.
And it just happens that there's some other girl
hiding in the bushes. In the same bush.
Okay.
I honestly think that she was taking a pee in the bushes, and Snake Plissken happened to coincidentally come upon her.
This movie's screenplay is sort of like a how not to tell a story.
Well, because this whole thing makes no sense. It didn't advance the story at all.
No, it didn't.
It's just a joke. It's just like, there's still plastic surgery, you know, going on, and they're out of control with it, and
there's this cult of people who worship artificial beauty or whatever.
Because he walks out of the bush and he gets trapped in a giant net that they shoot at him.
Yes,
right.
And they drag him and the girl down to
bizarre organ harvesting cult.
Yeah, down into the sewers where Bruce Campbell is the Surgeon General of L.A. and he's basically like you said, the scene doesn't make any, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It's weird because this woman's like, well, these people they're addicted to plastic surgery, and if they don't keep getting new body parts, they'll die. And it's like,
it's just a joke.
But it doesn't come back anywhere.
It's a creepy concept, and the Bruce Campbell's character is good.
Well, it's kind
but
of what
they
this
don't
movie,
do anything with
it's
him.
What this movie becomes. It's just a bunch of one-off scenes that don't tie together. Right. Don't even try to tie together.
Because all you do is you're like, you start off writing and going, okay, it's LA, so what do we need to show? Oh, we need to show the plastic surgery people are going crazy. You need to show, you know, the Beverly Hills. And amazingly, after the earthquake, all the street signs are still, the buildings all collapsed, but the street signs are fantastic.
Right, they were good.
A little spit and polish, and they're fine.
Yeah. And that spit dart that the Q character gave him earlier in the movie happens to, amazingly, wow, that does come in handy. He, like, spit darts.
Well, luckily, too, they put in a spot where if your hands are tied, you can get to it.
Well, they showed him earlier, like, putting it on his shoulder, like, attaching it to his shirt.
Yeah.
So he had the foresight,
so
too.
He knew, yeah.
So he spit darts Bruce Campbell. And now, by the way, seemingly there's still tons of Bruce Campbell's henchmen everywhere, but when Snake Plissken's like, give me my guns, they're like, oh,
they all cower.
We should all bring the guns to that guy who just spit a dart at that one guy. Yeah. We could overwhelm him pretty easily, but then they do bring him his guns, then start chasing him, which. So the girl and Snake Plissken, the girl's like, hey, you're going to let me out of here too? And Snake Plissken sort of thinks about it, and he's like,
all right, cut it loose.
Yeah. And they go running.
So again, you think, okay, they're going to develop this character.
You would think that. I definitely thought that.
I need to protect her. She's innocent.
Yep. That seems to be where they're going.
Oh, bang! Oh!
Well, the girl, gone. She also pulls like a Peter Fonda thing, where there's a scene where he's like, all right, I'm on my way, and she's like, all right, I could hang around. And he's like, I got to go do my own thing. Cut to.
Oh, she pops back.
The girl's right there with him.
Behind the car or something.
Behind the car.
It's me.
It's me. I'm like, why? Like, there was no, we didn't even pass any time. I know. Like, there was no transition. Like, and then you're like.
But before that, like what he brought up earlier in the tunnel when they're talking, just because it was bad. They're talking, and she's like, I know, I can take you to, or I know where Jose, or Cuervo Jose, or
Cuervo Jones is. Yeah.
Yeah, I can, and he's like, oh, and then it's like, they do like this weird, like, dissolve, and it's them walking down a different tone. It's like,
yeah, they dissolve.
So where is Cuervo Jones?
They like, dissolve the video and the audio.
They could have just cut to them walking around the corner. And
you're right.
The next
something
line.
Something went
something's
wrong
missing.
Yeah. In
they didn't
post-production
have
with this whole thing.
They reassembled the scene, because
like Peter Fonda, she weaves a scene, and then
comes back.
Very back into the scene for no reason. So then you're like, oh, okay, this girl is back in the movie. She's a part of this movie. Nope, as Andy said, she's immediately shot in the head.
Bang, gone.
Like, why did they bring her back into the movie?
So Snake could get pissed off that she got shot.
He forgets about her immediately.
Yes, he doesn't seem to care about her at all.
Not really, no.
Yeah.
He shows a little anger when he's like over, like, oh, they killed her. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Yeah.
And then Buscemi picks him up, right?
Yeah. Because
the people were shooting the camp up, they weren't anybody.
No, they're just like the Korean gang, they said.
Yeah, yeah,
they're just
shooting.
Like a Korean gang.
Just some gangbangers.
So it was just totally unrelated.
It was, yeah,
it was totally unrelated. It was related to nothing. Okay.
Yeah, no, had nothing to do with.
Good God. This...
Chavez or Julio. What's his name?
Cuervo Jones.
Cuervo Jones is the leader of the.
I don't know if it did, though, because like his gang were. Like his gang members looked like they were Korean or something, too. So I don't know if it was like part of. Like, or just everyone's just kind of.
Now, I got the impression that Cuervo Jones had somehow united all the gangs, that they were somehow all working for him.
Yeah, maybe just all the gangs, like freelance for Cuervo Jones.
That might
Jones
be true.
Like
he's never actually
everyone.
Covered in the movie, but you made that might be true. It's
I made that connection myself. I want the listeners to know that.
Yeah.
Well, then I get to, Buscemi picks him up.
Steve Buscemi picks him up in this awesome-looking car. And keep this in mind for later on. Steve Buscemi then drugs Kurt Russell like we're in Night and Day. And knocks him out, roofies him, and straight up kidnaps him and brings him to Cuervo Jones, where for some reason Kurt Russell's put on a treadmill? Why?
He's forced to walk. Oh, to tire him out. They want to tire him out. That's what it was.
Tying him up?
What? That makes no sense.
As opposed to throwing him in a cell or tying him up?
They want to tire him out.
What's coming next.
Yeah, but why don't they just lock him up? Why would they put him on a treadmill?
They want to tire him out. Because you know what's coming next.
Yes, we do.
This is
They want
dumb.
Him tired for what's coming up next.
Why don't they just kill him?
They're preparing him for the games.
I just realized that. That's what they're doing.
That's exactly what they're doing. It's ridiculous.
Like, I feel like this was another script idea that like Kurt Russell or John Carpenter came up with.
Let's just get right to it. Let's not even go with the whole.
Okay.
Let's not even go with the whole, oh, he called up and he wiped out the president's wife's phone. Let's get right to the meat of
the
it.
Best. All right, let me set this up.
All right, go ahead.
So, they have Snake Plissken captured because Steve Buscemi brings him to Cuervo Jones. And then they say, all right, we're going to bring you to the Colosseum. And I want to set this up. They take the L.A. Colosseum, and I'm thinking like, oh, this is actually a mildly interesting idea of they're going to turn the L.A. Colosseum into like a gladiator Colosseum.
Right. Because in Escape from New York, there was a gladiator fight.
Yes, and I'm like, that's actually an interesting kind of allegory. It is the L.A. Colosseum. And you do see, gladiator fights going on. Is that where they bring Snake Plissken? No. They walk past the gladiator fights and go to a basketball court set up in the middle of the L.A. Colosseum. And I was trying to remember this, and I was like, I remember there being basketball, and I was like, oh, do they make him play in like a crazy violent basketball game? Because that would be would be sort of Colosseum-esque. Nope.
It's one guy.
It's a weird shoot-around drill.
Yep.
With very complicated rules. Which they go over.
It's a little one-on-none.
Yeah, and the rules, I think the only thing we've ever seen where the rules were explained more was over the top and the double elimination arm wrestling.
Remember, double elimination.
So there's basically a shot clock. He has to make a certain number of baskets.
10 points, so 5 baskets.
5 baskets in...
The shot clock, I think, is 10 seconds.
10 seconds from end to end.
Yeah, he's got to shoot end to end.
From end to end.
Run from end
to end. He's got to run from end to end.
And if he doesn't, if he misses a shot.
He's shot.
Or something else.
Or the shot clock runs out.
He's shot.
Then he's dead. They shoot him.
Very complicated. And
so now he gets Snake Plissken just tossing some hoops.
Yeah. Shooting some hoops. Well, and this, I read up on this. Too. Apparently, Kurt Russell really practiced playing basketball to want to do this. But it looks goofy. Michael J. Fox in Teen Wolf looks like a more natural basketball player. I mean, Kurt Russell can barely dribble, and
which is very fine. Awkward. I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm not looking for him to see him.
But if he's making shots criminal. Like that, he's got to have some skills.
And he's moving so slowly.
They tired him out on the treadmill.
That's what I'm saying.
I guess.
That's exactly what they did.
And it just ends up with Kurt Russell making a full-court shot. And it's the most anticlimactic. It's one of the most anticlimactic things I've ever seen anywhere. To the point where even in the movie, a lot of the people in the stands are like,
that's it.
Okay. Well, hey, look, he made it. Yeah, that's cool. Yep. So
he's supposed to be able to walk off the court, but of course not.
He's supposed to be able to walk off the court, and the court is surrounded by Cuervo Jones's henchmen.
Yeah.
But Kurt Russell just climbs the side. This is so weird.
Because Cuervo Jones takes out a big gun, he's just going to kill him.
He's going to kill him, but his henchmen kill him.
Yeah.
So, Kurt Russell super awkwardly scales a fence and, climbs over. I'm sure it's, a stunt double, but it's, it's not really even shot in a very flattering way. Like, as I was watching this, I'm like, oh, God, that stunt double's not got to feel bad about how this looks.
Now, this whole scene, how ridiculous the basketball thing was, I thought he was going to be a hologram because he had the little pod thing that he could only use once, but it'd make him a hologram.
So you're thinking, yes. When is he going to use it?
So I thought he was going to be in the basketball court and he misses a shot and they shoot him, but he's a hologram and he's actually outside.
Yep.
And then he runs away or something, but
he
made all the shots. He actually had to climb the fence and run away.
Climb the fence. Well, the henchmen.
And get saved by an earthquake.
If you watch this movie again, watch a lot of the henchmen just sort of standing there just making arm movements, but not shooting at him as he runs away.
And then another thing too, I forgot about that. Every earthquake. I love when they do the earthquakes with the camera shake.
Yeah,
because nothing else around them moves. Right. Curtains stay still, and nothing moves on the streets.
Yeah.
And that never came back either. They kept having these aftershocks, and I thought there was gonna be a big one at some point towards the end of the movie, and it was gonna do something destroy the city or something. But
saved him in the sewer.
Never comes back.
It saves him in the sewer.
Well, they do. Okay, so
now he goes to the sewer. Yeah. So.
So all right. So there's an earthquake, and how does
he
this
runs
work?
Out? He Jones, runs out of the. They run out of the stadium, Coliseum. And he puts a rag in a gas tank and lights it on fire instead of just running away.
Oh, yeah, he turns car into a Molotov cocktail. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a shootout and he runs away.
No, it's where he gets he runs in the box.
He steals the box.
He comes up to right. Yeah,
because the president's daughter's there with the box and he takes it from her, I think.
He beats the shit out of Cuervo.
There's a big fight.
Cuervo Jones.
Cuervo.
Yeah,
he kicks his ass.
I think you're thinking of Quato from
jumps
Totally Call.
Jumps in the sewer. The hot chick goes after him in her little hot shorts, and
Yeah, it had to get creepy sometime, folks. Why not now?
I've been holding back, believe me.
Yeah.
And
have you?
Yeah. Like,
about what?
And Buscemi?
About Steve Buscemi
jumps in and follows him. And
by the way, Kurt Russell lackadaisically walking along this like sewer. Everyone would have just seen him go into the sewer, but he's like moving at like a snail's pace, just like kind of casually walking along. Yeah,
and he gets to the waterfall. He's not sure what to do. The president's daughter comes up.
Yeah, she's like, "Take me with you. I don't."
He goes to shoot her because he's supposed to shoot her and kill her too, but he can't.
So they run away.
And then Buscemi shoots his leg and he falls down the waterfall.
So this is important for later on. Steve Buscemi shoots Kurt Russell, takes the box and the president's daughter and goes back to Cuervo Jones is like, "Hey, look at me. I got your box back and the president's daughter. I've saved the day." To which Cuervo Jones like flips out on Buscemi for... I don't know why.
Being competent?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like basically being like, "You didn't bring me Snake Plissken's body."
Yeah.
It's not good enough that you actually brought back the whole thing that's at the center of
this movie. Should have been like, "Well, if you killed him instead of putting him on a treadmill, then we wouldn't have this problem."
Also true.
So he tells him to go, he might have washed out somewhere down the line where he knows, and he says,
"Go find.
Go get his head.
Go get his head."
So this is a great, here we go.
We really, I would call this, I would say this might be the low point of studio filmmaking in the mid-90s, is the scene that comes up next.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Russell walks out of a sewer.
Yep.
And
coincidentally,
Peter Fonda is there. He's like, "Hey, man. Wow.
I've just been standing here the whole time.
Look at me."
He's in a wetsuit.
That guy from earlier in the movie. We talked. I was talking to you. "Yeah, man, I'm that surfer." And
it's like, "I come down here to surf the tsunamis."
And then immediately says to Kurt Russell, "Hey, man, grab that spare surfboard I happen to have set up right next to me, because here comes a huge wave."
First, he tells him about Hershey, though. You have to go see Hershey. Cuervo. Is that what it was?
Cuervo. Jones, yep.
I thought you were struggling on Jones.
I got Jones down here. Jones. Cuervo.
Yeah.
And so he gives him that information, then says,
"Hey, man.
Grab the surfboard.
We have to," right. So there's just another surfboard there. So this horrible CGI wave comes in. And you get the image of Kurt Russell and Peter Fonda
surfing. T-shirt.
I mean, this
I
is...
I wanted a t-shirt.
I'm just glad they didn't play like the Beach Boys or something.
The big mistake was, studio lighting. Would have
too much money to get the license.
Green screen lighting and real location lighting mixed together. And it's so obvious. And the part where Buscemi's driving along in a car next to the wave. Oh my God, I can't...
None of these things... They should have done this optically. Yes. This should have been done optically.
They should have not done it.
Well, they should have not done it, but I mean, if you wanted to do this, this you could have done this optically and made it look really good.
Yeah.
Or, not really. No,
better than this. Better than this. We'll say better than this.
So they're surfing, and Steve Buscemi's in a car driving by and does a double take.
What?
And Kurt Russell high fives Peter Fonda. And jumps off of a surfboard. I think he says, like, "I'll see you later." And then, by the way, we don't ever see him. And jumps onto the back of Steve Buscemi's car. And my favorite part about this whole thing, we now get this crazy, like, Kurt Russell on Steve Buscemi's car, like, driving sequence. But the terrible surf music soundtrack continues playing. They got to a point where they must have been like, "Well, we can't get out of this surf music, so we're going to have to keep it for the rest of this scene," even though they're just in a car.
There's no way out of it.
Yeah.
So he starts... Now, here's where I'm confused.
Well, can I say one thing before we do that? They are driving in the car. I think they go through the alley from They Live. And you know what alley I mean. The alley.
I do.
The home of the 7-minute fight scene.
No, I do.
I think they drive down that alley.
That'd be awesome.
But
maybe.
It looked really
I would have loved it if they were still going in the background.
That's true.
Put on the glasses! What are they talking about? Don't worry about them. Okay.
I can't wear glasses. I only have one eye.
Yeah. All right. So wait, you were saying?
I was saying something.
Well, here's one thing.
Good.
I was saying it's funny at this point because I'm like, wait a minute. So Russell takes over the car and says, "Where's Hershey?" And he says, "Oh, he's down here, whatever." And all of a sudden, Buscemi's like totally on Snake Plissken's
side. Oh, absolutely.
I said, where's the turn? Well, where was the turn?
He was upset that Cuervo didn't appreciate that he had.
But Snake Plissken never says, hey, you just shot me. You just shot me.
You totally effed up my mission.
And now they're in like a buddy cop movie.
Yeah.
Buscemi is at one point, he's like, oh, by the way, I'm not with Cuervo anymore. He has no loyalty or something.
Yeah, like, I heard. Yeah, but I was like, it was just like that.
It was like 5 minutes ago. Like, right. This just happened. Yeah. I mean, five minutes in real time.
Yeah,
like
he fell down the thing, came out to where Peter Fonda was, then surfed. So it wasn't even 5 minutes.
And it was so Snake Plissken's like, so in the time I went down a sewer water slide, you are now a good guy.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, but they don't even talk about it. No. Oh, this was horribly done.
So it takes him to Hershey.
Who's on the Queen Mary.
Yeah, this is another... They keep wanting to work in these L.A. landmarks, and it never...
I guess you have to, but...
I guess, but it also should have been done optically. Yeah. They did some of this with matte paintings, but really bad.
Oh, the matte paintings
were terrible. Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there were some good matte paintings done in this era. These are not among them. Again, $50 million movie. Yeah. I mean, you know, where... So strange, the choices. And... Hershey is
actually carjacked something.
Carjack Malone.
But it's played by
Pam Grier. With like a man's voice dubbed over.
And I'm sure on paper this must have seemed like a funny idea. And it troubles me that when they were actually on the day or like that when they were actually assembling this, that someone wasn't like,
"That's weird.
This is not like this is not good. Work. It's not working at all. Like I mean, let's jump right into it's kind of offensive the way it's handled, but to even move past the offensive nature of it's just not even working as a story element.
Yeah, and Snake knows Carjack Malone from Cleveland.
Yeah, they keep talking about Cleveland. Now, I thought the film would be littered with references to the first film, New York, but it's not. It's full of a lot of references to Cleveland. Something happened.
Escape from
Cleveland
must have been.
I read up on this a little bit. Apparently, the Snake Plissken character is. Apparently somebody was talking to John Carpenter about someone they knew who's from Cleveland whose name was Snake Plissken. So that's when the name for this character came from, a real guy from Cleveland. So that's why you keep seeing references to it. Hilarious in-joke that all of us can appreciate. Thanks, John Carpenter. Here's the beauty of this, too. Like, Pam Grier is awesome. Like, I would rather just had Pam Grier... I would have rather just had Pam Grier play this part. Pam Grier is tough, like, and it could have been like, hey, here's a nice little turn, like the kind of revolutionary in L.A. is Pam Grier. She's running things, like, and they even ruined that moment.
Yeah, no, there's no reason for it to be Carjack Malone, and reason. The only reason for this character was to give him hang gliders.
Yeah. they burn horribly in the helicopter. Like,
they all die.
We got to get Snake Plissken a hang glider.
You just set up the only... Because now they're like... This character who never spoke before, they were like, oh, we're running out of time. We've got to get to, I don't know, some amusement park where Cuervo Jones is set up. And a character who never said anything before, never says anything again, is like... We've got to take to the air.
Santa Ana wins.
Buscemi's like, what are you talking about?
Who are you? But there were only like 5 speaking roles in this movie. And they get on these goofy hang gliders. And this is an overly storyboarded sequence. This is the danger, I think, of when you draw something up on a storyboard and you lock into it. Because I just felt like I was looking at storyboards. Yeah. As they cut all this together and some really weird shots of, like...
I love how easily they're talking to each other, too, while they're flying through the air on these hang gliders. It was like, holding normal conversation.
And
like,
they don't really even look that efficient.
No.
You know, I didn't... And in the world of this movie, they're claiming... I mean, if you're basing this on real L.A., because they're going to, like, fake Disneyland, to go from downtown L.A. to Anaheim is... really far. I mean, like, way farther than any hang glider could take any human being.
They're on the Santa Ana winds.
Yeah, I guess.
So,
come on.
They're in the jet stream, maybe.
Yeah.
So, actually, Buscemi takes some nail polish and marks his disc to look like the other one. That's a key point. Don't forget that.
I still didn't really understand what happened there, but I realized they wanted us to understand that one of the mini discs had a dot, but
So now it looks like the mini disc, just that red dot.
It's amazing that a map to the stars disc and the disc that could destroy the whole world look exactly the same except for one red dot, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, Steve Buscemi, full-blown good guy at this point.
Yeah.
Total good guy.
Yeah.
And then a military chopper lands in the Cuervo Jones's Disneyland headquarters. Why?
What was it?
Steve Buscemi was creating a distraction.
But like
in 47 Ronin.
But that came with the conversation with the president earlier. What was it? He wanted to bring a chopper to take him. What was it? There's some reason.
They're landing.
Pliskin overheard it when he was on the treadmill.
Okay.
There was a whole plan there.
Wasn't
he going to fly back to the mainland and then make some big speech from DC or something and press the button?
I did not understand why a chopper. And people who are piloting the chopper seem unsure of why a chopper is showing up.
Grossly inadequate, too.
Or maybe he's leaving LA. Maybe he wants to go, like, to Peru or whatever.
But no, it's like it's a military chopper from the president's. This is amazing to me that we're having to discuss.
Really discuss it because it doesn't matter.
But it's amazing that there's confusion on this point because it doesn't add up at all. Because the military guys land the chopper and then seem shocked. They land the chopper in a gang headquarters and then seem shocked that a gang are like taking over. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So Buscemi flies in then to create a distraction. He's just distracting Cuervo.
Yes.
So that he can switch
the disc. Yeah, the devices, and then risk, and then the other gang fly and start dropping bombs, I guess.
Yeah, that seems ridiculous. Like, they're flying around. Like, and everyone's shooting at him, and no one's hitting any of these guys. We're flying, like, 3 feet above the ground.
Very slowly.
Yeah, they're dropping hang
gliders. Stored, where they have a bomb stored.
On the Queen Mary.
I don't
know. When they're on the hang gliders. Where were they?
In their pockets.
I don't know. Yeah. next to the mouth darts. Yeah, that scene is goofy as anything. Yeah. And then we kind of get this, like, finally there's like a fight scene between Cuervo Jones and Snake Plissken that is strangely tension-free.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying about the
yeah.
There's no urgency to any of the shooting on this.
No, everything is just kind of, you feel at times like you're watching behind-the-scenes footage of them shooting a scene that would be exciting.
Once it's cut right.
If it was cut right.
Yep.
So Snake's like, get to the helicopter, it's bulletproof.
Yeah, he gets the device, Cuervo drops a device.
Yeah.
And so he gets
And by the way, first. All of his gang members are not in an armored attack helicopter. That's just free for the taking.
Anybody wants it. So they all jump in there.
And
they're taking off.
For no reason at all, like, they tie the... One of the bad guys ties the helicopter to a car.
And that ended up being nothing.
Yeah, because Snake's just like, we're attacked. Or something like
that. There's no dramatic moment. Yeah.
This is a multi-shot sequence. Just hangs out of the, this whole thing of, like, this rope, and a guy hooks the rope to the car, and, like...
Trying to take off.
And the guy's like, he almost does, like, a Tom Wilkinson fist pump, where he's like, I got the chopper hooked.
Snake's just like, Carjack, on your side. And Carjack, like, hangs out of the helicopter and shoots the rope.
Shoots the rope.
Now we're free.
Yeah. That was fantastically dumb.
Yep.
Now, a lot of what happens next is very confusing to me. So Carjack and everyone are in the helicopter, too.
Yes.
Right.
And Steve Buscemi is in the helicopter, too.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we get, we got to talk about it.
Yes, we do.
Here it comes. It's the show we do. A slow-moving rocket.
Rocket!
To which point, Steve Buscemi jumps out of the helicopter.
Well, after he shot Cuervo.
Yeah, he shoots
Cuervo. And then jumps out of the helicopter.
Because there's a rocket coming.
Yeah.
And
I wish he had yelled rocket when he was jumping out.
He really should have. Hey, everybody else, rocket!
Then Carjack and the rest of the gang, I guess, burn up and back.
Well, yeah, like the fire is only in the back seat.
I guess.
You never see anybody else jump out and there's a fire in back.
The fire never spreads to the front seat of the helicopter.
It seems to be an inferno.
He never says, hey, you guys okay back there? Nothing.
Well, it's like, it's an absolute blaze. Apparently inches from Snake Plissken's back, but does not spread.
Right, yes.
And
he's got the president's daughter with him.
He's got the... Right.
And they make it across the bay.
Yes. And then they...
She jumps out into the trees.
Well, he slips a device into her pocket.
Yeah. Yes.
She jumps out and runs into the trees. And then he crashes a helicopter. and it's fine.
And he's just gets fine.
Well, he's wearing that special suit that protects him from helicopter crashes.
I guess. And then, so Stacy Keach and the president. For Stacy Keach, who seems to now have ESP, is like, haha. He's like, hold on. Let me look in the president's daughter's pocket. Ha ha! Here's the same thing, the satellite control.
Evan, let me check her out.
Well, because don't they do something in Escape from New York? They do the same thing where he like switches the tapes or something.
Yeah.
So Stacy Keach remembers this and knows that he probably tried this.
Yeah. Oh, maybe. Okay. Maybe. I mean, yeah. I didn't even think.
He
about
even
it.
Says like, "Oh, you're getting predictable." It's but, all right. Snake Plissken knew that he was gonna. Assumed that he was going to do this, so he actually slipped the fake one into her pocket.
Just like in the first movie.
So what was even the point of giving the fake one to her?
Because they would think that's the real one because they thought he put the real one in her pocket.
This is real trespass territory.
They would have known if he was a hologram, actually, so they wouldn't be able to take the one from
him. Well, at that point, I don't think he was a hologram. I think
had to have been.
I think when they turned around and they were...
A moment where he's off screen for a little bit.
He jumped out of a helicopter.
No, I think it was when they're setting up.
He jumped out of a helicopter. Oh, maybe. It was in the woods somewhere.
Now, he's close enough. Now, this is something I don't get. When he finally does use the hologram thing, they explain there has to be a range to the hologram, right? So you throw like the disc out and it projects the hologram.
I think it was like half a mile,
though. But you have to be... Oh, it was? Because I was about to say, because wouldn't they hear him talking in the bushes?
No, either way, he had to get like... half mile away in a minute, but
right. Yeah. So I think he jumped out because
they would hear him in front of the camera. Play
I assume
acting.
That he did it when they're like setting up the press conference.
I think
it's
before that because we see the helicopter crash and all of a sudden he's walking around over here like, wait a minute, it's just a big ball of flame there.
Yeah, well, away from that. In fairness, it was a big ball of flame while he was still flying it around. So it turns out Snake Plissken is.
But wait a minute though.
Yeah.
At this point, he still thought that the poison was in his system.
Yes.
Or the disease.
So if he's in a hologram half a mile away, he's
exactly.
Gonna die
he's not going to get the cure.
Yeah.
So I figured because that's what I think is after because they tell him.
Well, what they laugh. They say they gave him the flu.
Took his eyes off him, let him run away.
But
well, they all turn around. They're setting the thing and
Carjack.
He just pulls like a Dr. Loomis from Halloween 2.
Carjack earlier in the film, Carjack says there's no such thing as Plutoxin 7, the disease that she says they injected me with Plutoxin 7, and she says that's no such thing as Plutoxin 7. Right. Kind of putting a shadow of doubt in his mind, but he doesn't believe her.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because the president and Stacy Keach say,
so at the end of the movie, they kind of laugh and say, ha-ha, we gave you the common cold. And he's like, damn it.
This really
but Cody makes a good point.
This is the trespass. I didn't
Cody
this.
Makes
this
a
is...
very good point, though, because if he thinks he's dying of a disease, even if Karjak plants the idea that he may not be, he still thinks he is. Stacy Keach is the antidote. He knows he's within an hour of, I guess.
It's like 3 minutes at this point.
He's 3 minutes before death. Why would he approach them in hologram form and take the risk of not being able to get inoculated?
That's a great question.
I never thought about that before. That's a good point.
I don't know. This is all very...
That's why I think he
You
did
think
it.
I wanted a kidney? Why would you think I wanted your kidney?
Three of them stowed away in the freezer. Congratulations.
So then Snake Plissken reveals...
Well, they set up... Well, first they set up a press conference.
The president
gets a device from the daughter.
Just like in the first movie,
they set up a mobile press conference. And he goes live to the world.
He's going
to
electric chair his daughter.
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry, honey.
Real subtle.
He goes live to the world says... Because there's like... I can't remember if it was Cuba or someone was like coming towards the American shore. They're going to attack. And he says, if you don't stop and turn your boats around now, we're just going to turn your country off.
We're going to turn your country off.
And Ro Laren is like, they're still going towards the shore. And he's like, okay,
Ro Laren.
What's the code for Cuba? And she's like, 521 or something. So he punches in the thing and hits play or whatever, and it stars the map Eddie. He's like, oh. And he's
did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Because it's not the exact same thing that happened at the end of the first one.
Yeah. And then Stacy Keach is like, well, you're still here, Snake, so now give us the real one. And he goes, they're going to kill him. And they all shoot him, and he's not dead. And
he's a hologram. Yeah. And then Snake
Plissken. And he punches in the world code.
666.
Yep. He shuts down the earth.
Yeah.
Welcome to the human race.
Yep. And then,
many messages in this movie. Many messages.
Many heavy surgery messages.
Hand peas.
Yep.
Surfing.
Dangerous holograms.
I like how they sort of saved Steve Buscemi's character. Like they were all thinking, like, yeah. When we make escape from the Earth, we can have Steve Buscemi back. Make sure he lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is good stuff. We got it. We got it. This is gold.
Now, I never knew about Escape from Earth. I always
hey, guys, stop writing that sequel. Yeah. Well, box office just came back, yeah.
That's basically what happened.
Well, I'll tell you about your story, because I was, the summer of 96, there were two huge budget kind of like genre films that that were seen as huge disappointments, and time has viewed both of them differently. It was Escape from L.A. and The Frighteners.
Yes.
And The Frighteners has come back, and people have realized, like, oh, this is a really good movie.
I always liked The Frighteners.
I liked The Frighteners, too. Yeah. It was
critically, it was not great. It had a tough reception. It was not financially successful.
Yeah. I can see why it wouldn't be successful. It's kind of weird.
I loved it when I first saw it.
Yeah. And whereas this movie is, I think, actually aged worse. I mean, The Frighteners, when you watch it now, like, aged better. I think it actually plays better now. Yeah. And
the effects in it are still good and stuff. And sound
And this movie is worse. All right, we have two So Wrong It's Right questions. No. The first one is, producer Deborah Hill, in an interview, described one of the characters in this movie as, quote, the heart of the film. And I'm going to have you guess who it was. It is a speaking part. I will give you two hints. One, it is not Snake Plissken. and I will say this. It is not the president's daughter.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
It's not the president's daughter. I know. It's not so, but it is a speaking part. Who did producer Deborah Hill see as, quote, the heart of this movie?
I'm going to say Peter Fonda.
Peter Fonda, okay.
I'm going to say the chick he meets who gets killed immediately.
Okay. And Andy? Her name.
That's a good one, too.
Thank you.
But that seems too... That would make sense. Oh, that would make sense. Well, so it's not that one.
How would that make sense?
It doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense.
She was like, no, but she was like, I was put here for religious, you know, purposes and, you know.
Okay.
Steve Buscemi.
Okay, Cody's right. It was the girl. Was really? The girl was in like one scene and killed. The heart of the movie.
There you go.
And our second So Wrong It's Right question is the Disneyland set, the fake Disneyland set where Cuervo Jones is set up. Mm-hmm. Did anyone recognize that as a much more famous set?
I didn't really look at it.
No.
You're all going to feel very silly.
To be fair, I'm doing this review on memory.
It's a very, very famous location.
Back to the Future.
Yeah, I was going to say Back to the Future.
It's the Back to the Future Town Square. It's the Back to the Future Town Square.
Hill Valley.
Well, because I was fascinated, because all through the movie, this is a Paramount film, I think, but there's a lot of Universal references. Yeah. And I'm like, they're really referencing Universal a lot. And then that's on the Universal Studios lot.
I didn't recognize it, but when you said that, that popped in my head.
Mm-hmm. So what an awkward conversation to say to Universal Studios, which is a theme park, hi, we want to do a recreation of Disneyland at Universal Studios. And also, Paramount has their own lot that they couldn't even do this at. It's just that sort of brilliant thinking.
And a $50 million budget. Some of that money couldn't go to building a fake theme park?
Yeah, yeah. Or I would have had them just go with
shooting
like
at a Six
Magic
Flags.
Mountain. I'm sure if they'd gone to Six Flags Magic Mountain, they would have, you know, been thrilled. Or Knott's Berry Farm would have been like, hey, bring it in. Okay, so I think that brings this one to a close. We will do a preview coming up. We are going to delve back into the world of Bond, James Bond, with Die Another Day, the franchise that killed Pierce Brosnan as this is the last Brosnan Bond,
it
right?
Is.
And then they rebooted the series after it because like this is not the right direction to be
and
going
it took
in.
A while. It was like a couple of years before they rebooted it.
It was like
it?
4 years,
2006.
Four or five
that was 2002. Casino Royale came out in 2006.
Okay. Yeah,
it's basically like this came out after September 11th, and they're like things are more serious now, and we can't have like a goofy Bond.
I have no real memory of this movie, so
I got a lot of
memories. They're
seared
in my
basically take everything you know and remember about Casino Royale. This is the opposite with Bond in it.
And there's a tsunami surfing scene.
Oh, great!
For fans of Escape from LA,
and anyone who's fans of Halle Berry.
Don't watch it.
Yeah. Well, and we're also going to be having Pompeii coming up soon. The big budget. It literally is a movie about a disaster that was a disaster.
I have to see that because the trailer didn't look bad when I saw it in the theater.
Really?
I smell a defense coming by Andy Wolf.
I didn't see it. I was going by trailer.
I see that Nonstop is coming out in Blu-ray too.
Pompeii, I never saw it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm intrigued by that. I want to do one of these Liam Neeson action movies. Unfortunately, Taken 2 wasn't really bad enough for us to to handle, but maybe Nonstop will be. As we always finish up, you can you should like our Facebook page. I had got a very good laugh out of the pictures we posted from both Ronan and Godzilla. The Godzilla picture, I had even forgotten that moment with the silly mini dinosaurs with the popcorn.
Yep.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That was enjoyable. And if you have a second, if you like the show, please take just a second, give us a review on iTunes. It helps boost the show, makes our lives easier. It only takes a second. And there are some great reviews on there you can add to now. And I think that is it. We'll bring this one to a close. We will see everyone back here very, very soon. Andy, do you have anything else? Do you want to creep it? Any final creepy thoughts? I feel like there's creepy thoughts you've been saving. Okay. You're good? All right.
Yeah, we were supposed to have a lady on the show today, so I was going to scale them back.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So I did, even though she wasn't here.
Quite the gentleman, I appreciate.
That's an interesting sort of like logic you just applied to the situation. You like you censored yourself so heavily that you're like you couldn't uncensor it.
I couldn't. It's just carried. You know, I'm just carried over.
Okay, good to know. Well, that's weird. And we will be. All right, we'll be back next time. Thanks. Bye. Oh, yes. Greatest.
I got Jack.
That's right.
Greatest tackle line ever.